Welcome to She Is Never Lost, But At Least She Has Wine, a podcast made just for you. Your host is Felicia Stitzel, world traveler and influencer, professional photographer, sommelier, Navy veteran, and mom. Tune in every Thursday for solo episodes where she shares her life story and a wine highlight. Pour yourself a glass and let's dive in.
Welcome, wanderers and wine lovers and people alike, to another episode of She Is Never Lost, But At Least She Has Wine. Today, I have a really fun and engaging story to share with you, but of course, as the name of the podcast suggests, we're going to dive into the wine first. My wine highlight of the week is Storyteller Ever After Red Blend. It's a 2017 from Sonoma County, California. This one I paired with the theme of my story today, and it is because tonight is my storyteller side, so that's why it will be a good one to sit back and relax with a glass of your choice of beverage and enjoy this particular episode, because it's going to be fun. It's going to take you on thousands of miles across the country. But, of course, obviously, before we dig into that, we have to discuss the wine. I love Storyteller because not only is it a brand that has a lot of fun with their label, with their names. They have a Chardonnay that's called, I think it's called like Summer Camp Chardonnay. There's a bunch of them. But, of course, like Ever After is like the perfect finish, which is what this wine is for sure. It's been a long time since I've had this one, but I chose it when I was back in the States and I brought it back with me because it is definitely a really, really great wine to highlight when I want to talk about some really, really great wines and not just have them all be Spanish wines. So let's dive in. Wow. Just right off the nose, you can tell that that's like that sweet, perfect finish to a story, that Ever After. So, of course, from Sonoma County, you're going to have, and it's a blend. It's going to be a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot. Those are going to be the two primary wines that you're going to find in this blend. But then, of course, they're going to fill it in with something else, probably a Malbec or a Petit Verdot. Yeah, those would be good ones. I mean, it really all depends on the vintage and what's available to add a little extra spice in your life to really bold up this particular wine. But of course, the primary two grapes that are going to be blended in this are going to be Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot. And because of that, like, you can seriously taste even through the nose. Like, this is very dominant. You are going to get like, ugh. I'm getting black cherries and plums. Like, those are the two biggest ones, as well as also some vanilla and clove and like raspberry with like a hint of blueberry in there. So, I mean, definitely a lot of fruit forward, a lot of primary flavors here. And that's just all off the nose. So then let's get into the taste. Wow, it has been a long time since I've had this wine. I was really expecting it to be not as fruity. Like, that is a really, really fruit-forward blend. Like, I definitely would have to say that they probably put a Petit Verdot or a Petit Syrah in there. I feel like it's probably one of the Petites. Very possibly that I'm wrong. But it has so much of, like, that bold-forward fruits that I really wouldn't be surprised if they had used a small percentage of one of those Petit grapes to blend in there. And there is a big difference. For those who don't know, there is a big difference between, like, a Syrah and a Petit Syrah. Those ones are, like, the clusters are a little bit smaller, but it's more like one of those where it's, like, the smaller the house, the bigger the punch. Because the grape isn't designed to really retain water, which is why it's really, really good to be blending and have, or even as a standalone varietal, like Petit Verdots and Petit Syrahs are some of my favorite single varietals because they are so concentrated in their flavors. They are so bold and they're very fruity, but they have a lot of those tertiary flavors, which comes from, you know, normally from aging or, you know, aging the barrel or aging the bottle, whichever. A lot of the tertiary flavors are just really, really good. Like they have a lot of like caramel taste and very fruit or like very sweeter taste that they kind of, if they have that time to age and age properly or, you know, in a good oak barrel, not a neutral barrel, it really does add an overall like beautifully well-rounded grape and single varietal. But that's not the one we're talking about today. Today, we're talking about the Storyteller. So that was, I have to sip it again because that's just, what's so interesting is that it's not lingering on my tongue, which is something that I would really expect from a higher level alcohol percentage, like what this one has. This one has a 14% alcohol content, which normally means that the kind of taste lingers a little bit more, like the finish lingers a little bit more in your mouth. You get a lot of that saliva coming afterwards, like the lingering in your throat and the saliva that's produced after you're done swallowing your sip. Little pro note there, the higher the alcohol content, the more that you're going to salivate, because it's like your mouth trying to cleanse from that alcohol. So it's actually a good kind of rule of thumb is that the more, generally good rule of thumb is that generally the more that you salivate, the higher the alcohol content. So pro note there. Not always the case, but for most red wines and heavier bodied white wines, that's kind of the good rule of thumb. I mean, this is so fruit forward. I mean, exactly what I was smelling is what I'm tasting in this blend, because like I said, I don't taste it as much overall on my tongue. It literally hits like my mid palate and then it washes. So it does have a little bit of a lingering flavor to it, but not as long as I was anticipating. So it kind of took me by surprise, but it's so light. Like even though like I'm still like after every sip, I just feel like I'm salivating so much right now. But even though it has all of these big heavy hitter grapes in it, I was kind of expecting it to be a little bit deeper, have a little bit more of like the heavier tannins in them because it has the Cabernet Sauvignon in it. But honestly, my opinion is that this one probably has more Merlot in it, as well as some of those petite grapes I was talking about, because I mean, there's so much fruit on it and the tannins are actually not as high as I was anticipating, that it almost is, instead of a heavy bodied wine, it's actually more of a medium bodied wine, which I was not expecting. Still absolutely delicious. Like this is like, it's almost like a preserve, like a jam. It's very, very jammy, which is something that you would find in a lot of those more medium-bodied grapes, is you get that jamminess to it. You don't get a lot of that heaviness and a lot of those tannins. You get more of a jammy fruit flavor to it, which is exactly what I'm tasting here. So now that we have extensively discussed this particular wine and a few other random wine notes, let's dig into the story. A Wayfair World. If you've been listening to this podcast for a few episodes, you might have heard me mention about the year 2015. The year 2015 for me, for those who haven't heard, was a huge year of transition for me. I had just gotten out of the Navy in June. I had gone through and finishing up my last little bit of time in the Navy. So I'd spent the first half of the year in the Navy, and then I was kind of finding myself a little bit, and I got a part-time job for myself. Actually, it was a full-time job, but I was also going to school and at the Harley-Davidson shop. And by October, I'd gotten rewind a little. So I got out of the Navy in June. I got a new job while I was on leave. Like separation leave, that's when you are literally on leave, but still getting paid by the military for using up all of your last, you know, days off it's called terminal leave, to get out of the military. I used up all those days to go find another job. By the end of my terminal leave, I was already in a new job. So I was in June. And then I spent the summer, you know, working and kind of trying to stabilize myself. I was in a very rocky position in my mental and emotional statuses of my life. I had had a very, very rough time in my last deployment, and I wasn't handling it very well. And I didn't know how to ask for help or even who to talk to or how to start that conversation. And I was now in a position where I had to readjust back to civilian life. And there was just a lot of areas where I really had the rug like swept out from underneath me. Everything that I thought was stable in my life was completely up in the air. I was really, you know, pandering at that point, just wanting to reach for something that was going to be stable in my life. You know, obviously outside of my marriage, because I was still married throughout this whole year in process and everything. So that might even surprise you even more when you find out that throughout the summer, obviously I was working and doing school. And then in October, I ended up meeting a gentleman. He came out to the Harley-Davidson dealership that I was working at, raising money for a charity that was very near and dear to my heart. It's called the American Legion Legacy Scholarship Fund, which basically is a scholarship program designed to give assistance, financial assistance, to service members' children who have lost a parent in the service in the line of duty. So, of course, just getting out of the military, this was really near and dear to my heart. I helped coordinate and organize the whole visit to the Harley shop that I was working at. And then I had asked for all of my time, you know, basically volunteering to do this event and to help out with it, because that, of course, was extra on top of my actual workload. My one request was that I got to do an exclusive story with him, an exclusive interview with him. Of course, going back to my journalism side of my life and my deep passion and what I had just got out of in the Navy, I wanted to tap back into those skills. Once again, I was really pandering. I just wanted to find something that I was good at, something that felt normal. And of course, reverting back to my world and, you know, the Navy journalism fields, I said, oh, this is something I know I can do. This is something that is familiar to me. This is something that I know I can do and that I love and I miss it. Let me do it. So I got to. There was like a weekend long event at the Harley shop. The Harley shop that I was working at, they actually owned two locations. And so between the two locations, there was kind of like a full weekend event of things that we had planned to help raise money. Everything went off amazing, raised a lot of money to help out these kids. And at the very end of it, it was like the day before, it was the last main event before his ride out the next day. We were at this restaurant that was actually very close to my house that I used to go to all the time. It's basically a burger, beer, and wings joint that was close to my house that we used to go to a lot. And I got to sit down and I had my exclusive with him. And at the end of that exclusive interview, he had mentioned about how, like, you know, it'd be really, really great to have somebody like you on the road with me. And I was like, oh my God, like that sounds like a dream. He goes, really? Like, yeah. And travel around the country, taking pictures and seeing and experiencing new places every day. Like that sounds freaking awesome. Huh. You could just see the wheels turning. So I go home that night and I mention this to my husband and he's like, he's going to offer you the job. It's like, what? He goes, yeah, nobody reacts like that. Like he's going to offer you the job. I was like, I don't even know if there is a job. He just kind of mentioned that it would be nice to have somebody on the road. He was like, yeah, but he's going to offer you the job. Sitting out on my patio, Newport News, Virginia, discussing this. And lo and behold, the next day, this gentleman pulls me off to the side at my work before they left. And he was like, yeah, I would like to discuss this further. And, you know, obviously he had to ride out to the next place, but he's just like, you know, like we should set up like a phone call, like interview basically to discuss whether or not this could be a thing. And of course I instantly like turned around and called my husband. I was like, yeah, you called it. Now, most people, getting to this point in the story, most people would not think that just because my husband mentioned that he's going to offer me the job, that my husband would then also let me go and get hired for this particular job. So the job was basically, I was the chase vehicle, but I wasn't just the chase vehicle. I was the social media manager. I was the tour manager, like in present, because he had another person who was actually setting up all the dates and scheduling with all of the Harley shops that he was visiting. So that was like a whole different role. But when we were actually in the Harley shops, I was the one who's managing everything. So now I'm the driver, the social media manager, the photographer, the content creator, and the tour manager, all while, believe it or not, living that van life. I mean, it wasn't technically a van. It was my Chevy Equinox that I converted to living out of my car for. But he offered me the job. And my husband said, you should do it. Because as many times as I tell this story, I will never, ever, ever stop thanking God that God brought my husband into my life for so many reasons. Because once again, I don't know too many people who would let their wife go off with a random biker stranger for a job. Like whether it was a job or not, don't know too many people who would be okay with that and comfortable and confident in our relationship and everything to send their wife off for, I mean, the contract was for a year. Now, it didn't last a year, but the whole contract was for a year. So I ended up kind of going back, summarizing on that one. I only ended up living out of my car and being on the road with this gentleman for 6 months. So it wasn't the full year, but it was still, I mean, that's still a substantial amount of time. And the deal was that after he offered me the job, I had requested that I get to meet up with him after my anniversary, end of November. So he offers me the job before Halloween. I believe it was, yeah, it was like right before the first week of November, something like that. Like it was right in that time frame. And I was like, okay, but I have, like, I want to actually be able to spend my second anniversary with my husband. And at first he said that was fine, that he didn't have any issues with that. It totally makes sense. And I would like to be able to spend that time with my husband since our most of our first year being married, I was deployed for. So didn't really get to have a whole like actually enjoying ourselves first year of our marriage because I was gone. And so at first he said, yeah, that's fine. And he calls me back a couple days later and he's just like, you know that I said it was fine and I'm really sorry, but like I really need you before then. Is it possible that you can meet up with me sooner? And then since we are going to be like the schedule meant that we were going to be close to Virginia still, and he would actually pay for my husband to like cover gas and a hotel room for us. And we could kind of have like a little getaway weekend while I was on the road, but take the weekend off and go spend our anniversary together. So I talked it over with my husband. He said, yeah, that's like, that makes sense, especially since he needs you earlier and he's willing to cover, like, and I'll be off that weekend. Like, I'll make sure I'll be off that weekend. And that's exactly what happened, was he ended up doing just that. And so instead of leaving after my anniversary, I was suddenly getting ready to pack up my life because we weren't going to be back. Like, we're getting ready to transfer to my husband's next command. I mean, shortly after I left, like, it was going to be early springtime. So a few months later, my husband was going to be packing up our lives in Virginia to move to his next command. So now I had like 6 days to finish out finals, say my goodbyes, pack up everything that I needed to pack up before the movers got there that needed to be sectioned off in a certain specific place, and packed up my life in my Chevy Equinox that I had had less than a year. And on November 10th, I was leaving and I was meeting up with this gentleman in Tennessee for my very first day on the job. Crazy. Like, thinking back about how quickly that all happened, it just is astounding. Now, most people going into this would be like, ooh, that is a lot of change happening all at once. And you know what? It was absolutely terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying because I was, you know, to pull from Frozen 2, super going into the unknown. Like, I had no idea what this year was going to turn out for me. Like, you know, we're going to say a year because the contract was for a year. So when I drove out, I was going to be gone for a year. You know, I didn't know what this was going to look like for me. And I understand, like, I understand the traveling aspect part of it. I understand being able to travel and live out of my car because growing up, I had road tripped lots of times camping at campgrounds and my mom, you know, pulling out the back seat and putting a futon down and sleeping in the back of the vehicle. So that concept wasn't a hard one to grasp. Living out of my car wasn't a hard one to grasp because I had just recently gotten out of the Navy where my whole life was in a teeny tiny wreck surrounded by my five, hopefully, good friends in what we call a little six pack where you literally are sleeping on top of each other, like stacked on top of each other. That's what we call it, like a six pack, of beer. You're just stacked on top of each other. And I had to fit my whole life in my rack and in my locker on a boat. So the space thing wasn't a thing either. So, you know, those are two big factors that most people would be like, oh, whoa, like hard pass. Whereas for me, I was like, you know, those ones are okay. It was everything else. I had done social media management when I was in the Navy, obviously as part of my job, and especially on my last deployment, where I was posting up all these pictures on social media to show the family members and the world, you know, basically what we were up to and the morale of the sailors and everything. You know, it was a way for us to connect the families together while still being on the other side of the world. So the management part was still very new to me, though. Like, I remember when I actually first got on Facebook, I was forced onto Facebook, which makes me laugh now because I have so many jobs and profiles and access to profiles on Facebook. It's ridiculous being an ads operative director like I am. It's just ridiculous. But at the time, you know, I did know about how to manage things on social media. I knew about posting and I definitely knew about the journalism side of things, about, you know, sharing the story, which is a part of like a major part of my job. The photography part didn't scare me because I had been dying to get my hands back on a camera and actually be working with my camera again in my hands. Like, you know, there are some things that you just miss. So as I'm sitting here in my mind, you know, before I had actually accepted the job, going through my whole pros con list, because yes, I'm ridiculous and I do a pros cons list when it comes to big things for myself. And of course, I had discussed this extensively with my husband and kind of worked through all of the things with him out loud, which really helped. But it came down to me. And what was I going to do? And I was leaving a world that was kind of patched together at the time. You know, I had a good working relationship. I had really good, amazing friends that worked with me at the Harley shop. You know, still surrounded by a lot of people that I was in the Navy with at one point, that there was a good support system for me there. But everything else in my life was just pandering. And by the pandering definition, I didn't mean, you know, to indulge, but I meant to the whole, you know, you just go along with it. I had a life that I was just going along with. I didn't have something that was my defined idea of life. I was just going along with it. Even though I had a job and I was in school and I have my husband and we had our home, like all of those things seemed to be so stable. But because of where I was at mentally and emotionally, I was going through the motions of my life. I was just going with it. I wasn't fighting for anything. I wasn't fighting for this, you know, to It was like a salmon fighting upstream to reach that goal, that overall, like, this is my life's mission, accomplishment. I was just doing it. I was just getting by. And so I knew I needed something. I needed a change. I needed some way to find myself. And I thought maybe this grand adventure might help me with that, which is why part of the reason why I did it. Big part of the reason why I did it. Let's be honest here. Like, not only is it a great opportunity for a traveler like me and a photographer, but also, like, it's traveling. Come on now. Like, I was going to be able to see, not just drive through the country, I was going to go and experience the country. So like I said, I met up with him December 10th in Knoxville, Tennessee. And from there, we zigzagged our way through all of the states. From there, all the way south. So we're talking North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Louisiana. Well, he only had a few stops left in Louisiana. Florida, we hit all of Florida. And through every single one of these states. Oh, and then from north or from south, we went all the way up north in the winter. Let me just pause there for a second. This gentleman riding a Harley to different Harley shops, raising money, headed north on two wheels, just in time for winter. Yeah. Yeah, that was a fun one too. And then we drove all the way from the very southern point of Florida, and we headed all the way north to Illinois and Indiana and all those places up there, and then worked our way back down, where eventually we ended up going our separate ways. But that wasn't until we went all the way back down south again in Arkansas. So I had a lot of states with this guy. And 6 months is a long time to be on the road with somebody. But it was a long time for me to be on the road and to have a lot of that time on my own. And I'll tell you what, I had a ball. I had an amazing time. I met the most wonderful people, people who took us into their homes without asking questions and just wanted to give us a place to sleep and shower the next morning. I got to sleep out under the stars in Boone, North Carolina, and see some of the most amazing, clearest stars I had seen, to then a few days later being on Outer Banks, North Carolina, where I captured the best photo I'd ever taken in the civilian world at the time. There's actually an episode on that. It's like, you know, capturing the rays of light. Go back and listen to that one. It's a whole story by itself. You know, and just being able to have that ability to wayfare. I was completely nomadic at the time. My entire life fit in the back of my car. Everything that I needed, my school, I was still a full-time student when I was doing this, by the way. So sidebar here, still a full-time student, which means that as a photography student, where my classes were only 6 weeks long. So that means that pedal to the metal, that's a full-time job by itself. Because I didn't just have assignments like once a week. I had two or three assignments a week. And I was in a new city, at least two new cities. No, I feel like my average was probably three new cities a week on average. That was like a slower week. Most of the time I was in a new city every single day except the weekends. Weekends were our time to like sit back and recuperate. Weekdays it was running and gunning. Different cities every single night, different Harley shops every day, sometimes two of them if they were close by and they were kind of smaller. Insane. This was an insane life that I was living. The schedule was absolutely off the charts, like nuts. And then you add being a full-time student on top of that. And that's not just like being a full-time like book student. I was a photography student. Like, I remember I had finals over Christmas. It was like the week of Christmas. And we had actually stayed in a hotel I want to say I was in South Carolina at the time. Yeah, I was in South Carolina because I was still close enough that I actually ended up driving home over the Christmas holiday break and surprised my husband. But I actually set up my full light studio kit. Like, I had to bring all of that equipment with me because I knew I was going to have to need it. So here I have my full mobile studio kit, backdrops, tripods, light stands, all of the things all fit in the back of my car. And I had to pull those out and set them up in a lobby where I asked the very, very sweet night attendant who was working the desk at the hotel that I was staying at to, would he pretty please model for me? Because you don't have anybody else and the photographer can't be their own model. Like, you fail the assignment if you're your own model. And they make us take a picture of ourselves at the beginning of our courses so they know what we look like. So add that struggle on top of living this nomadic life and trying to also maintain a very high GPA, because I was on the dean's list and the honor roll like my entire time in school. And I really didn't want that to drop off during my last few months or my last year in school, even though I had taken this crazy job, because I knew that if I stopped, I probably wouldn't get started again. That was my fear, because I could have taken a year off and then jumped back into it when I was done being on the road. And I'm really glad that I didn't, because even though, boy, talk about being unstable mentally already, and you add those levels of stressors on top of that, yeah, it was like breakdown capital in my car some days. I was really thankful that I was driving in my car by myself, outside of having sometimes a tiny, tiny chihuahua sitting in the car with me, because I went through a lot of screaming at my windshield and a lot of singing to try and ease my panic attacks and my anxiety, and a lot of crying, but trying to do it really discreetly so that way when I got to the next place that we had to stop at, I didn't look like a crazy blubbering mess all the time. I have to say that that trip taught me a lot about myself in a lot of ways, but I had never been more vulnerable emotionally. And I didn't know what to do with that. Like, I hadn't been that level of emotional and didn't know how to control it anymore. Like, that was the problem. My whole life, I have always been a pretty emotionally controlled person. Like, yes, I have flares up and I can get, you know, 80 to 100 really quickly once I'm at that point. But I tend to be a very level-headed, even-tiered emotional person. And especially through a lot of my life, I had trained myself for years about not giving in to the emotion. You know, that was something that was very important to me, because I had let myself give in to the emotions too much and ended up getting burned. So I was a very reserved person, whether it came to hurt or anger or love or any of those things. And when you compile all of those for years and years and years and you bury them way deep down, when you finally get to that breaking point, it is a hot mess. Hot mess. Oh my God. There was one night, this is not a proud moment of mine, but we're going to be transparent here. What I wanted this podcast to be part of is to be transparent. I need a sip of wine for this one. I was still in Tennessee, so I hadn't even been on the road for that long. I think I'd been on the road for about 10 days, and I was still in Tennessee. And I remember going out to my car to grab something, or to like take a breather, and I had a triggered moment. And I had something to do with... It had something to do with the conversation, had triggered something with my PTSD. I didn't have that level of control yet for those triggers. I had just learned how to remove myself. I had to stay cognizant enough of my surroundings that I knew I couldn't just be standing in Walmart and lose my crap. Like, I had to keep it together. I had to go find somewhere where I could then lose my ever loving crap. Like, but it was one of those like mind over matter, and I had to control my emotions long enough to excuse my, like, I had to find the emergency exit kind of crap. So when I now no longer, I had that control enough. Like, I barely had my hands on the reins of that particularly wild stallion. And I just remember the gentleman had met up with some bikers that he knew from, you know, a while, and they were riding with us for a little while. And we were sitting at this like 24-hour diner, like it was, you know, chain store, 24-hour diner. And we're all sitting there eating junk food or whatever it was that we were doing. We were eating and talking and, you know, BSing about. And I got triggered. And I couldn't even tell you what it was at this point, but I had gotten triggered and I excused myself. And I literally had forgotten my keys inside. So I couldn't even go back inside because I already knew I was like past breaking point. And instead of being able to have this very vulnerable moment in my car where I could have my safety like net around me, I ended up curling up in a hyperventilating ball, crying my eyes out behind a dumpster of this diner. Yeah, super proud moment on that one. But that's where I was at. That's where I was at emotionally and mentally. I was a minefield. And thinking back now, like, I'm so glad that I went on this trip. I'm so glad that I took this opportunity because I did have an amazing experience, but I was not ready. You know, if I were not a mother right now, I would be ready now. But even a few, like, this is only a few years ago, and I was not ready. I was not ready for that. So it was, as apparently I tend to do things, a trial by fire. It was either you put up or you shut up. You figure it the out. Don't take that the wrong way, but like, you figure it out or you don't. And not figuring it out was not an option for me because I had to function. I could not be one of the only females. I did meet up with a few females on this trip, and one of them, several of them actually are still very, very close friends of mine. But it's like, here I am in the man's world kind of crap. And I was like, I cannot be, you know, held to the standard that he's introducing me. I was like, yeah, like, she was this awesome, you know, photographer in the Navy and did all this, this, and this. And she's a veteran. And yeah, she's awesome. And then just be this emotional wreck. Like, it just couldn't happen. It was not letting myself be on that standard. And a lot of it is pride. You know, it really was. It was very prideful of me to not allow myself to go through emotions and processes and stages of, you know, dealing with things. It was very prideful because heaven forbid you take the tough girl out of Alaska to throw her in the most worst position possible. And then basically she tells herself to suck it up because anything less than that is embarrassing. That's how what was going on in my mind. Anything less than that is embarrassing. Like, Felicia, you cannot embarrass yourself. There's a whole other explicitive conversation happening between me and my windshield at this point. So I'm not going to repeat that part. But you can kind of get the drift. Basically, fill in the blanks with a lot of colorful language and terminology about the human anatomy. Pull yourself up by your boots. Like, you are not this. But that was one thing that I always stuck with me. I was like, you know what? I'm not this. I am not this hot mess garbage pile that is putting on a nice face and this facade to get through her day. Like, this is not me. And so what I held on to was the fact that it's got to be a phase, right? Like, it's got to pass. Not everything terrible lasts forever. And I was like, you'll get through it. And until then, just keep pushing. Keep pushing yourself. That was like my mantra for this entire 6 months. It was like, you just keep pushing yourself. You push yourself to be tougher. You push yourself past your boundaries. You push yourself that if you feel triggered, you push that down. But either way, you are pushing through it. You're going to push, 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 and you're going to fight back. You are going to fight back because anything less than that is weak. Let that one sit for a second. Anything less than that is weak, which is probably why there's also such a terrible stigma, especially in the military, about asking for help. Anything less than that is weak. Asking for help. Like I said, I had no idea how to ask for help. I didn't even know where to start. I had mentioned this a few times in previous podcasts, so if you hadn't heard that yet, I apologize. But I didn't even know where to start that conversation. Not with my husband, not with professional help, not with friends or strangers or anyone in between. I didn't even know how to ask myself where to start. So now that we've clearly covered all of my mental stuff, whew, like I said, you need a good glass of something for that. Let's talk about actually living on the road. So there have been multiple times now since I've left the road that I have wanted to go back to that van life. Because I feel like had it actually been a van, so for the first 3 months, 3.5 months or so, I was living out of my car. We found campgrounds to camp at. People put us up in their homes. Every once in a while, like, we were gifted staying in hotel rooms where we could actually sleep in a real bed and take a shower and have a hotel room to actually kind of like rest and recuperate for ourselves. And then in late January, when we were in Florida, we'd actually stayed as kind of a rest downtime. We were staying at a friend of his house in southern Florida. And this crazy idea kind of started coming to life. And it was to buy a bus, like one of those old school school buses. Blah, blah, blah. That it wasn't the flat front bus. It was like the trucker kind of front bus. He had this very specific image. And strip it down, paint it matte black, and convert the inside of it from being a school bus to kind of an RV. And let that be the new chase vehicle. So sadly, I had to then put my car into storage for the remainder time of my time on the road, which is about, 2.5 months. And for a few weeks there, I then drove a bus, which was kind of terrible, especially since we were heading up north into the winter, which was not my favorite thing in the world. But what was very sweet, though, was that, yes, we ended up converting this whole RV or this whole bus into kind of an RV thing, you know, that way we could have our own showers and kind of a place to sleep. Since we were going up into the snow, we couldn't do the camping thing anymore, and kind of have our own little mobile shower. And what was really wonderful, though, was that there was like this whole back of the bus bedroom set up. And as we're building it, like, totally had assumed that that was for him. Like, I was gonna be camping out up front on like one of the bench beds that they had, you know, that we had all made. And just kind of going with it, you know? It was like right before we set back out on the road when he had like this little ceremony between him and his friends and me that he was gifting me my own bedroom. Just so nice because, you know, as the only full-time woman on this whole campaign, it was nice to be able to have my own privacy and to have my stuff set up and to have like make my own little slice of home in the back of this bus. But you know, just to be able to have my privacy was really nice. But living that van life, though, like just being able to just pick up and go, like I loved that feeling. So if you have ever had that where, not to say so much like the RV thing, because, you know, the RV thing was nice. But honestly, like I'm looking at possibly next summer, like renting one of the little camper vans and just road tripping around Europe because I can. It's like me and my kid. My husband is not going to be here for a summer next year, or like an extended period of months going into next year. I think that's going to be on my billet, is to rent one of those little camper vans, because I don't like the whole RV thing. It's convenient, it's nice, but I don't know if I would want to do the whole camper thing, especially here in Europe. Like, there isn't a lot of people do have RVs. Like, I live very close to a little RV park, so you can do it. I see RVs coming in every single day, even now, even though all of our regions are supposed to be closed down, but you know, nobody told them. But I love that we could just pick up and go. And then when we got tired for the night, like, I didn't have to push to get to a certain point. Like, we could just pull over and find a good place to camp and sleep. I loved having that kind of freedom, which is why I really want to do it again, because that and just, you know, if we want to take a side divergent location to over here and then ended up taking too long, so, you know, got late and we wanted to crash for the night, like, go find a parking lot, go find a campground, go find a, you know, really big, you know, I slept in a lot of trucker stops. Let's be real here. I slept at a lot of trucker stops on this particular adventure of mine, because free parking and there is a shower inside. We slept at a lot of them. Like, poor guy, he had to sleep on the ground until we got the bus, and then we were all sleeping in the bus in these trucker stops. But you know what? You have to do what you have to do. But I love that, you know? It gave you that sense of freedom, but self-empowerment at the same time. Like, you know that you have to do it. Like, you have to figure it out. You start really thinking outside of the box. So, coming to the end of my story here, it was an amazing experience. I am so grateful that I did it. Like I said earlier, I am so glad that I met the people that I did, who, like, I'm still friends with to this day, who still check in on my life, who helped encourage me as I'm still continuing to write my blogs and through doing these podcasts and my social media posts. I mean, they are there engaging and encouraging me every single post that I do. And having that kind of support system is amazing. And not having fair weather friends either is also pretty amazing. And memories that I've made with them. I mean, these are memories that are completely unique to this one thing. It's not like we met on a cruise, because anybody can go and take a cruise and become good friends with somebody. How many people do you know follow a random biker around the United States and meet up with people along the way because they wanted to come ride with him for a few miles, and then in turn end up meeting me and then become friends? You know, that's a very special situation. That's a one in a million. So I took my shot, and I took that one in a million. And unfortunately, it didn't work out. Obviously, work being on the road with him for a whole year, but it was still an experience that I wouldn't trade for anything. Even with all of the crazy things and all of the emotions and everything else that I was processing as a person. And because if I had not taken this chance, and if I had not decided to do this, I don't know if I would have faced as many of those things mentally, because I wouldn't have been challenged to face them. You know, I was, like I said, I was in a very comfortable routine. I had my place and my support system back in Virginia, and I wouldn't have had to conquer my fears. I wouldn't have had to face things. I wouldn't have had to be challenged for these things. I just would have been. And yes, there were a lot of struggles. And there was a lot of drunken stories in there too. Like, there was a lot of chasing people. There was a lot of chasing people. I was not just the, you know, tour, the only woman on the tour for the most consistent time, but I ended up becoming like the tour mom, making sure that, you know, nobody got arrested, nobody got hurt. We got kicked out of bars, you know, very important things. Yeah, that one kind of fell on me too. Because if you're the driver, then you're also the DD, which means that you're enjoying a few drinks while everybody else is enjoying a few more drinks. So fun times. But that was exactly it, though. Like, there are so many cities now that I probably could never go back to without thinking about my time on the road. You know, it was such an amazing experience. And it not just, like I said, for what we were doing, but the people I got to meet, the places I got to experience, and what I really learned about myself. So I hope that this has maybe inspired you a little, maybe not to like quit your life and go hop on the road for 6 months with a stranger, like not encouraging you to do that because that's how murder movies are made and horror movies are made. So let's be smart, but also challenge yourself to get outside of your normal comfort zone. Go take a long road trip, and instead of sleeping in a hotel, go camping. If you love camping, then, you know, try sleeping in the back of your car. And parking, well, I wouldn't recommend that. There was one time I had to park behind. I was so tired and I was just trying to find a safe place to sleep for the night. And I ended up pulling into this teeny tiny town and fell asleep behind a church because I figured it would be the safest place. But I was like, this is how horror movies are made. The girl goes down the dark road and parks at the wrong spot. And yeah, there was a lot of, it wasn't much sleep that night, but I had to get off the road sometime. So I don't recommend that, but challenge yourself. Push your boundaries. Step outside your comfort zone a little and then go a little bit more. And then go a little bit more because you have no idea what you're going to experience. And honestly, the biggest piece of advice that I could give about pushing your boundaries is that you have no idea what you're going to find out about yourself. And you know what? You might hate it. Like, this is not just all about roses and sunshine here. You might actually hate it. But you know what? You tried it. I say the same thing to my kid about eating food. Certain foods. And my child tends to be garbage disposal most of the time. And then there are some particular situations where, you know, she is a four-year-old with four-year-old struggles. And sometimes I just have to tell her, like, you know, at least try it. And if you try it and you don't like it, then at least you tried. At least you did it. But you learned that about yourself. You never would have known that about yourself if you hadn't tried. So try it. Try something different. Honestly, like, I'm still attempting to wrap my mind around wanting to stay at a hostel. But sometimes people's like, I know a ton of people who love hostels. I'm more particular to campgrounds and hotels in the back of my car. Everybody has their own thing. But set out on an adventure. You might not drive and live out of the back of your car for thousands and thousands of miles and months on end. But you might find yourself at the end of this journey knowing a lot more about yourself if you just do something different. Heck, last year was the first year that I had ever stayed in an Airbnb. Right? I told you. Campgrounds and hotels. That's like super opposite ends of the spectrum. Random parking lots. Sleeping behind churches. Like, that was more up my alley. You never know. So don't be afraid of the struggle, though. As we covered tonight, or whatever time it is that you're listening to this, there was a lot of struggles on this journey for me. And I feel like, and some of them I was still had to process emotionally later, just because you pair up that much stress and that mental place that I was at, I had a lot of healing and processing to do later. And that's okay. That took time. And I have been able to go through that. And on the other side of it, you know, I can still talk about how what an amazing experience this was. And I wouldn't have changed it for nothing. So I hope you take my advice. I hope that you have enjoyed this podcast. The ins and outs, the ups and downs, the funny, the sad, the slightly pathetic, and everything in between. So I hope you've enjoyed this story. I'd love it if you would leave a review, a comment, share a post, check out our social media channels. Everything's going to be over in the show notes for both the wine and the social media stuff. Please tune in for my next episode next week, where we'll be diving into more amazing stories and wine. A little note for coming up on She Is Never Lost, But At Least She Has Wine, season 2. So I'm kind of pulling a Netflix. I talked about this a little bit on my last episode, but I'm pulling a Netflix and I'm doing short seasons. So I have 2 more episodes in this season. And then in season 2, we are going to be talking about travel. This season has been a lot about sharing my stories, life lessons. Really, I wanted this first season to be about being transparent and helping anyone of any walk of life being able to relate to where I have been, where I am, and what I've gone through on some level. It was my hope. If that happened, that's awesome. If not, you got a good story out of it. But in season 2, we're going to be focusing on travel. Travel tips, travel locations, places I've been, things I've experienced and seen as a solo woman, as a Navy, like traveling with the Navy, and then also traveling as a parent. So if you've enjoyed this podcast at all, I would really, really love it if you would stay tuned, especially to hear about all of the wonderful travel that's coming up in season 2. Stay tuned. Cheers.